So we're starting with Shin Yud Ches, and you should have both the Nishmas Avram and the other sheet. And as you see in the heading in Nishmas Avram, the heading from the Shulchan Aruch, it's Din Hamavashel B'Shabbos, the law of cooking on a Shabbos. So he jumps from the beginning to Se'ev Beis, the part that's going to relate to patience. Hashochet b'Shabbos l'chola. If someone shechts an animal on Shabbos for somebody who is ill, the doctor prescribes red meat. So you shecht for the patient. Bein shechala me'esmo, bein shechala hayom. Whether he was sick before Shabbos or whether he only fell ill today, mutar havari l'chol mimenu chai. Parentheses b'Shabbos. Aval hamavashel. Oh, actually, let me stop before the mavashel. A person who is alive and well and healthy is allowed to eat from that meat raw on Shabbos. Good evening. He's allowed to eat from the meat of that shechita. That's a statement of the Shulchan Aruch. The reason why he specifies whether the patient was ill the day before or the patient fell ill today is because if the patient fell ill today on Shabbos, I might have said that the animal is muktzah, because you didn't expect to use it before Shabbos, and therefore, while you can use it for the patient, we're talking about a patient who is dangerously ill. That's our case. When we say that you're allowed to shecht for the patient on Shabbos, you're talking about a patient who's dangerously ill. So I don't care if your animal was mukta. That's the least of your problems. You're shechting an animal. However, when it comes to a healthy person who wants to eat from the same shechita, I might have said the animal should be mukta. And what he's telling me is that it's not mukta. And the reason it's not mukta is because we follow the view of Rabbi Shimon. This is the Mishnah Brura's comment on this section. That we follow the view of Rabbi Shimon, that it's only mukta if somebody actively says, I am not using this. Which no one ever said regarding this animal. He simply didn't use it. That's not the same thing as actively rejecting it. That's the opening part. So, if there is a patient who is deathly ill, and I shecht on behalf of this patient, healthy people are allowed to eat as well. Why is that? Why do we let the healthy person eat too? What's the rationale? Well, the rationale is you didn't do anything special for the healthy person. It's only one act of shechita. It's raw. No one cooked anything. It was simply shecht. That's it. And you would have done the shechita the same way, whether for this patient or whether for this patient plus 100 people. If you take a look on the side sheet, source Aleph, where I brought you the sources, this is the Gemara in Chulin from which this comes. Amar of Dimi Mina Herda. I think we found the only four non-Jays fans.
Listen. They have a compromise. That's right, priorities.
Excellent. So the... So what the... What the Gemara here says in Source Aleph is Amar Avdimi Minaherda, Ravdimi of Neherda said, Hilchasa Hashochet Lachola B'Shabbos Mutar Lebari Beumtza. I added in the word Chai as an explanation of the word umtza. Ravdimi explains that the law is that if you shecht for a dangerously ill patient on Shabbos, a healthy person is allowed to eat from the meat of that shechita when it is not cooked. My time, oh why? Kevan di yesher lekizayis basar below shechita, because you're not getting an olive-sized amount of meat without shechting the animal. So when you shecht it, you shecht it with the patient in mind. That's who you had in mind. And then everybody else is just a slight beneficiary. But he continues to say that if you cook for a patient on Shabbos, asr labari, then healthy people are not allowed to use that food. Even if you don't do any special cooking on behalf of the healthy people, you've only cooked once, and you cooked one pot of food, gezeira shema yarma bishvilo. The concern is that you might come to do more once you know that it's okay, that healthy people are allowed to use it also, the concern is that that whoever the chef is, the person doing the cooking, is going to cook extra on behalf of the healthy people. And to bring us back now to the Nishmas Avraham page, where he quotes you from the Shulchan Aruch at the top of the page, so he says, "Hashochet b'Shabbos l'chola." If somebody shechts on Shabbos for a for a patient, bein shechala me'esmo, bein shechala hayom, whether he fell ill before Shabbos or he falls ill today, doesn't make a difference. There's no law of muktzah for the animal. Mutar habari le'achol mimenu chai. The healthy person is allowed to eat raw meat from it b'Shabbos. Aval hamavashel. But then he continues to say, if you cook for a patient, oh, asa sha'ar malacha, you see in parentheses, or he does any malacha, it doesn't matter, lachola, for the patient, asur b'shabas labari o lachola she'in bo sakana. It is off limits for a healthy person. It is off limits for a patient who is ill, but not dangerously so. D'chayshin and shema yarve b'shvilo, as the Gemara says, we are concerned that he might come to add for this person. Clear? That's the fear. The Rama then writes, Haga, Vahafilu bishel al yedei eino Yehudi, asur b'shavas. Even if it was a non-Jew who did the cooking, and therefore it's a derabanan, right? There's a derabanan issue of not asking him to do it. Nonetheless, asur b'shavas, you would not be allowed to benefit from it on Shabbos. However, the Magen Avraham notes a quirk on this. Normally, if a non-Jew does malacha for me on Shabbos, I'm not allowed to benefit right away after Shabbos, right? There's a principle that we call b'chdei sheyasu. You have to wait long enough that he could have done it for you once Shabbos had ended. Have you heard of this? What's the rationale? Why am I required to wait? It creates a disincentive. Because the fear is, if the non-Jew did this for me, so the fear is I'm going to go asking him. Once I know I'm allowed to benefit, right? So I want this taken care of, I want this done, so therefore I'm going to go ask him to do it for me. And there's no disincentive for me to do so. However, if I'm going to, if I'm going to have to wait anyway until however long it takes to do this after Shabbos, then I might as well wait until after Shabbos to ask him to do this, rather than break Shabbos to ask him for it. So that rule doesn't apply in this circumstance. In this case, where the cooking is being done via the non-Jew in a permissible way, it's 100% fine for him to cook for this patient. So therefore, there's nothing wrong with asking him to do this on Shabbos. So therefore, there's no reason to say, wait until this time of Bichdei Sheyasu, wait for enough time that he could have done it after Shabbos. It's mudr for me after Shabbos, right away. Clear?
So just to recap, because it came out late. So if you need to shecht an animal for somebody who's sick on Shabbos, you can't only shecht part of an animal.
Right.
And that's why you're allowed to do the whole animal. But you could cook only a small portion of food, and that's why you're not permitted to cook anything extra beyond what you think that sick person would eat.
Correct.
What if you make this portion that's truly just the size for the sick person, and they don't eat it?
Right. So then you get this statement that he made of that was the end of Sora Salah. Right. You saw this gezeira. We saw this concern that people who know that that's permissible to them
would be tempted to make a generous sized portion.
Yeah,
knowing there'll be a little left over for someone else.
Exactly.
So you can't eat it even if it was left over.
Correct. So that's the Shulchan Aruch with the Rama, and then finally he says, we're on the fourth line, the middle of the line. Vim kitzeitz peros min hamachubar l'chola b'Shabbos. If he cuts fruit that had been connected to a tree for a patient on Shabbos, or is connected to the ground, afilu hayachola mi ba'od yom, even if he was ill before Shabbos, asur l'bar, so you'll say, well, therefore everything was ready, before Shabbos. It was ready in the sense that it's not muktzah when you plan to use it. Asur labari b'Shabbos. He says, you're not allowed to use that on Shabbos. Now you'll say to me, why? You only sever the fruit once. What's the big deal? So he says something remarkable. Mishum shegadel v'holech b'Shabbos. Because the fruit keeps growing on Shabbos. In other words, when Shabbos started, the fruit was 97% of its current size. It grew another, whatever it is, 3% on Shabbos. That 3% is brand new, and therefore is motzah. V'yesh b'mishum, as he says, v'yesh b'mishum motzah. This actually is a fascinating discussion in its own right. It will. The Magen Avraham says that's only if it did not complete its ripening process before Shabbos. In the event that it completed its ripening process before Shabbos, then you won't have this problem. So that's our opening piece from the Shulchan Aruch.
So even somebody healthy can eat that fruit.
Even somebody healthy
as
would
long
be.
As it's been fully ripe.
100%. 100%. So, you know, as I was preparing this, and Dr. Kirsch and I were talking about this before, I was saying to myself, you know, how practical is this? How many doctors today are prescribing go shecht an animal, you know, on behalf of this poor patient? Or in the case of the patient who needs the hot food, realistically, in the hospital, it tends to be heated up by some anonymous person in the kitchen. And also, as Dr. Kirsch pointed out, it's already pre-cooked and it's just being reheated, which takes it a level down in terms of the concerns that I would have. If the guy's at home, then presumably you have food for Shabbos anyway. It's not as though you're saying, oh, I ran out of hot food. I have to have hot food for this, you know, deathly ill person on Shabbos. However, the points that the Nishmas Avraham makes have great relevance for the way that we take care of patients and various issues that that do come up. So,
in this discussion, what about warming up soup on Shabbos afternoon? Sick person.
So if you have a patient who's dangerously ill, you're fine. In other words, that's, you know, the question, I guess the carryover question will apply, the one from here. Could other people use it? Right? Would other people be allowed to make use of it? If you're talking about soup, you have the question of whether liquids, once they've cooled off, go back to a raw status, and therefore it's called an act of cooking. So let's take it out of the soup question. Let's say it's not soup. Let's say it's chicken. And so it's already fully cooked, and therefore I would argue that it's a rabbinic prohibition against reheating it. Would somebody else be allowed to use it? What would you say? So would somebody else be allowed to eat the leftovers? He wants shalosh shudas. The patient didn't eat the whole thing.
Not according to this.
Not according to this. Not why? How do you know?
This incentive.
Right.
We want the disincentive, but also because the Ramah noted, even where a non-Jew was the one who did the cooking, which was a dirabanan, right? And we still said you're not allowed to do it. So even though it was only rabbinic, that's going to be the rule. Where it's a single atomic action, it's an indivisible action, and there's no concern that you might increase, and there's no mutzah issue, then yes, you'll be allowed to benefit from it.
But then bi'ameinu, since a lot of the kosher foods are already prepared, pre-packed, cooked chill or cooked frozen, and made in one portion, all they can ever warm up is one portion. So if it's all warmed up for the cholesh yesh bo sakana, in one portion, and there's no adding or detracting from it, and then the cholesh doesn't finish it, it was only done as one element, so by what you're saying, you should be able to use it if you're not the cholek.
Why do you say that one couldn't open up two and heat up two?
Because you don't get that's two. Not what they're going to do in the
hospital. In a hospital, they're going to send up one meal.
Yeah, but let's
and they don't open it. Right. They prepare it closed.
See, I see your argument in terms of the fact that it's not divisible. Yeah. In other words, even if the patient only wanted half a meal, they're not heating up half a meal. No. Then I hear the argument that there's no concern that one might heat up more.
They're not that generous with the portions.
It's an interesting question. I don't know. That's a very interesting question. So would we be able to say that someone else is visiting the patient in the room, the patient didn't finish it, this other fellow says, you know, boy, that hospital food was yummy.
They're not on psychiatry.
Yeah. It's an interesting question. I don't know. I want to think about that one a little bit.
So I have a question. So what... This is also a concern at home. You have the patient at home. So on the one hand, you have a dangerously ill patient who is at home and is going to eat chicken, like scenarios that are unlikely to happen.
Exactly.
Dangerously ill people aren't necessarily
eating. That's not true.
I mean, I'm sure it could happen, but so what? The reason you would have a dangerously ill patient at home would maybe be somebody in a hospice palliative situation at home.
Okay.
So in that case, you're not expecting the food to necessarily save their life, but maybe make them more comfortable. And is that, so that's really what my question was. Is,
right.
Is it different? You're not really having an idea that this warmed up chicken is going to save them,
right.
But will ease, make it more comfortable.
Right. What I'm allowed to do, it's a very important point, what I'm allowed to do for a dangerously ill patient is not limited to medicine. It's anything necessary for keeping them in as healthy a state as possible. So that even if it's not curing the illness, it is enabling the body to be able to deal with it. So painkillers, food, comfort, basic comfort, all of these are what I'm supposed to do.
Grinding medicines.
Also, all of it. I mean, we're dealing with a dangerously ill patient. All bets are off. So that's... I want to think about that one hospital meal question. I think that's a really interesting twist on it. Take a look at the Nishmas Avraham in the lower part of the page, please. His first comment is on Bishul, and he writes, Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana. I love his acronyms. The Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana, patient who's dangerously ill, Shedorush Lo Ochel Chan Kedei Lechazko Ulsa'ado, who needs hot food in order to strengthen him, to provide him with support. So there you go. That's your example. Ve'ein b'makom ochel cham haraui lo. And there is no hot food that is suitable for him in that area. Osha ochel hacham eino tari deitzer choshal hachole. Or it's available, but it's not fresh enough. It was heated a couple hours ago. It's been sitting out. It's whatever. V'chein cholim misukan she'drusha lo shtia chama. Ve'ein mayim chamim b'makom. Or it's somebody who is ill, who again, is dangerously ill, and he needs a hot drink, and there is no hot water available. Mutter levasha lavuro b'shabbos. In all these cases, you are allowed to cook, and I think the reason why he needs to say that is precisely because of your question. He needs to explain this is not only a matter of providing medicine; it's a matter of providing general support for the patient. You'll notice in footnote number one, he refers you to the bir halacha. I'm good, thanks. I'm fine, thank you. He refers you to the Bir Halacha at the bottom in Shin Chav Ches. The reason why he refers you there specifically, it's important to know, those who were in the series 2 years ago will remember that we did the introduction to Shin Chav Ches there. Shin Chav Ches is the most basic section in Shulchan Aruch dealing with patients and what you can do for them on Shabbos. And in his introduction, he goes through all these different categories, what's considered dangerously ill, what's considered to be, bedridden, and so forth. And so that's where you will find the discussion of what sorts of things you're allowed to do, and is it just medicine or other things. It's very, very worth reading. Okay. So that's his first point. His second point there, by the number two, is about marbe bishiurim. Marbe bishiurim means increasing the amount that you do, not increasing the number of melachos that you do. You do the same number of actions. However, you heat up, in this case heating, a larger quantity. And so he writes, after saying, see the discussion further along in parentheses, he then says, Mevashel adam es kamut hamazon hadrushal chola shebesakana. He says, person cooks the quantity of food needed for the patient who is dangerously ill, but no more than that. And he's not allowed to add to that which is needed, even if he's going to use the same pot. You're still cooking more food. Even if you put it in the pot before you light the fire. You follow the distinction that he's defeating. The distinction would be between where I put my pot on the fire and then I start putting in the food, in which case I'm doing an act of cooking with each one that I put in. As opposed to, I load up the pot first, I put the pot on in one shot, and therefore I would say it's only one action. And he's saying it doesn't make a difference. That I would have thought that would help, but it doesn't help. V'rak im hasha'a d'chukalo. However, this is a key however that applies to many, many issues in taking care of patients on Shabbos. What he's about to say is an overarching principle. He says, rak im hasha'a d'chukalo, he is but if you're pressed for time, ein tzorach ledakdek b'mida, you don't have to sit there and be precise. Well, how much food does he need? Is he going to eat 3 slices or 4 slices? That far you don't go. Elayitem b'kedera ba'ayin yafa. You should put into the pot with a generous eye. Ba'omed das kefi shadarish l'chola. Based on your estimation of what it is that the patient is going to need. So in other words, the doctor or the chef or the caretaker or caregiver or whatever it is should not sit there thinking, well, I have to evaluate exactly how much this patient needs. It doesn't work that way. If you're short on time, throw in whatever you think might possibly be needed, and you're good. Not only that, he says, let's say the only thing you have for cooking is a large pot. And you can't just cook the single unit that this patient needs, because if you do that, it will ruin the pot. Right? If you take a pot, a large pot, and you have only a little bit of food in it, it's actually bad for the pot. And then you won't have hot food for the patient. Then he says you're allowed to put in more than the patient needs. If by damaging the pot, you're not going to... You know, if it's all the same to the patient, so lose the pot. However, if the result will be you're not going to be able to cook for the patient, then add food. That's what you do. Okay. But his third point here, by the number 3, was the discussion that I thought would be particularly interesting. And that is the question of what the best way is to heat up food for somebody on Shabbos. Three-way... contest. Gas, stove, or microwave? What would you say? Of the three, which is the best way to heat up food for the patient?
Heating elements, or talking about stove top, oven, or microwave?
Let's say gas stove, electric stove, microwave oven.
Electric stove.
Why?
You don't have to physically turn on and cause a flame.
Okay.
Microwave oven, you don't have to physically turn on and create something that's indirectly going to heat. In an electric oven, to me, the heat is more indirect than the other two elements.
So what does that mean, the heat is more indirect? I understand what you said, that it's not a flame, right? Assuming we don't call metal that's glowing a flame, which we're going to have to look at. But I accept that there's no flame. Why is electric better than microwave?
It is, but I don't remember the answer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see what he does, unless anyone else wants to offer.
Seems like electric, you could have left it on before Shabbat, and it's on. Microwave, clearly it's not on. You're pushing all these buttons and making things happen. It's going on and off.
Right. See, when you introduce the microwave, there are so many other activities that you also have to consider.
You cause the little thing to spin around. You cause the...
Right.
I mean, I don't know.
Unless you lost the plate.
Gas, I don't know if people leave a gas flame on, like on their stovetop all of Shabbat. I don't do that.
Well, you may have a pilot.
Yeah, maybe people leave that on. I don't know.
I don't remember what we concluded, but I remember learning years ago there's like a big machloket of cooking with a microwave is technically cooking.
You got it. That's exactly where we're going. So take a look at number...
Just to back up one little bit. All this we've talked about so far, were we only talking about reheating already cooked food, or were we talking about actually taking raw
food? Cooking raw food.
We checked this animal this morning, and now we're cooking this raw food.
Right. Or if, you know, the doctors for some reason decided that dangerously ill people do not need red meat, then cooking any other item that wasn't shafted as well.
Right.
But that was hobbied by the dairy farmer. So
it could have been an egg.
Right.
We could be talking about an egg,
yeah. In the Gemara's day, the doctors were a lot better than today. They recommended hamburgers for patients.
They're also dead at 39.
So I think they were the barbers.
Maybe they knew something. Yes. Okay, so let's see number 3 in this Nishmas Avram. He says, Bameh Mevashlim, the question of what means you use to cook. So he says, Hatzarech Levashel O Lechamim Ochel O Mayim Avorchola Sheyesh Bo Sakana. Is it different from this edition? Yeah.
Totally.
Okay. If somebody needs to cook or to heat up food or water, avuchola sheyesh bo sakana, for a patient who is dangerously ill, im efshar, if possible, ya'adif lehishtamesh bekirat chashmal, ach lo bekirat gaz. He says better to use an electric stove or an electric oven, either way, as opposed to using gas. Because if you light a gas stove or a gas oven, he says, you need to do two actions of igniting a fire. Why two? First of all, lighting the fire from which the gas is going to catch. And then, using that flame to light the gas. Whereas if you just turn on an electric stove, an electric oven, it's only one action of ignition. However, he then writes, if there is a permanent flame in the gas stove, gas oven, bless you, but he writes in parentheses, the pilot, that all you now have to do is turn the dial for the gas, and it will light on its own from the pilot. So then he says, I see no difference between gas and electric. It's a single act of ignition either way. But he says, if you can use a microwave oven for this purpose, adif yoser, that's better. Why? Shekein ein bo isur bishul min haTorah, because there's no biblical prohibition in cooking that way. And you see footnote 7, jump down for a minute into the footnotes, where he writes, Shamati me'agon or Shlomo Zalman Orbach, she'eino dome klal lebishul shahaya b'mishkan ki ein kan eish. Or Shlomo Zalman Orbach said, microwave cooking is not like the cooking that went on in the Mishkan, right, which is our template for which by which we define what you can't do on Shabbos, because there's no fire involved in a microwave. Now,
well, wait a minute.
Yes.
When you turn it on, you turn on lights.
He's getting to that. We didn't get there yet. You're right. He needs one more line.
You open the door and
right.
And lights come on the screen when you push the buttons.
All agreed. That's his next line. But right now he's just saying the act of cooking with a microwave, he will not view, or Shlomo Zalman will not view, as an act of biblically prohibited cooking.
But electricity is considered within the scope of the Torah prohibition.
So, actually, let's do one more line and then come back to that. Ulam, however, mikomakom, still, behaf Allah so, in activating the microwave, right, what we're talking about, pushing the buttons, the beeps, the boops, and the lights, and so forth, yeshbo iser Torah. There is a biblical prohibition, he says, in turning it on. So he says, do that in an unusual way. Right? The question of what constitutes a shinui, again, he discusses elsewhere, whether the back of your finger, is a sufficient type of unusual way. Left hand versus right hand, we assume, does not make any difference when it comes to pushing buttons on something, because we are just as efficient with our left as we are with our right. There's no discernible distinction in terms of that. And generally, shinui, we assume, requires not only that you do it in an unusual way, but that it somehow be less efficient. So doing it lefty isn't going to help you. Maybe the back of your hand or something like that would be better. Well, actually, he writes it. Why am I telling it to you? He says, I know. In gav ha'etzba o gav ha'yad uchadam v'chule. He says, like using the back of your finger, the back of your hand, those are acceptable types of shinuyim. So you convert it from a biblical prohibition in terms of the activation to a rabbinic one. Now, I should note, Rav Shlomo Zalman's position on electricity in general is that it's not a biblical prohibition. That's the Rosh Shlomo Zalman's take, is that completing a circuit and so forth is rabbinic. So what he means when he says turning on the microwave is biblical, I'm not actually sure. Unless it's the Nishmas Avram talking, and he doesn't feel comfortable taking that view because the Chazon Ish and others said it was biblical. Maybe that's why he says it. But Rosh Shlomo Zalman did not take that as a biblical issue in the first place. But now he introduces a separate point of view, which is important to know about. In other words, he's given us Rosh Shlomo Zalman's take. Microwaves are better, and therefore what he would rather you do is use the microwave and turn it on with the back of your hand, as opposed to using the electrical, as opposed to using the gas. That's his preference. Laura, you're going to ask?
And there's also this new induction technology, which is electric, but it's different.
You know about whether you have the coil or something that's in the...
Yeah, and it, like, apparently...
It's magnetic.
Yeah, because it only works on...
Right, on the rubber. Like
on the induction one on Shabbos?
No, I'm just saying, it's a different, you know... Microwave technology didn't exist 50 years ago. Now there's this other technology,
right.
Which is not...
It comes similarly to, like, microwave, where you push a button to turn it on, you have to, like, you know, push
it stays cool. If you touch the element, it's cold to your hand, but if you put the right kind of metal pot on it, it'll heat water to boiling in, like, 30 seconds.
Right. No, I have seen that.
I'm not sure what the technology is other than... You can test if your magnet sticks to your pot, it'll work on the induction. So it's not the exact...
So iron is what you're talking about. But
I think
what we're going to see here with Rav Moshe is actually going to address that. Let's see what he does. But in order to see this, we first have to look at the sheets at source Beis, Gimel, Dalet, the table I put into Hay, because this requires some explanation. This is the issue of cooking on Shabbos. And in order to understand this, we have to look at two categories of cooking. One is called Eish, and the other is called Chama. Eish is fire. Chama is the sun. Chama is the sun. Chom is heat. Chama is the sun. We're going to distinguish between cooking something by putting it on a flame and cooking something by leaving it in the sun. Okay? That's our starting point. So the Mishnah says, Ein nosnin beitza b'tzad ha-mecham b'shvil sh'tisgalgel. You don't put an egg next to a mecham, which is a kettle, in order for the egg to cook. Velo yafki embiz on Shabbos. We're not dealing with a patient, just general cooking. Velo yafki eno besudarin. And you are not allowed to crack it on cloths and have it be heated in the sun. That's the first view in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi matir. Rabbi Yossi says, you are allowed to do this. Now, there's a big debate as to what Rabbi Yossi is permitting. Is he permitting both of the preceding lines, putting it next to the pot, and also cracking it on these cloths, or only the latter one of cracking it open on the cloths? The Bavli is going to assume that he's only permitting the latter one, the cloths. He's not saying you can put it next to a kettle that's on a flame. He's talking about only cracking it over open on the cloths. Yerushalmi is different, but I'm not getting that far afield with this. The Mishnah continues to say, "V'lo yatminena b'chol u'ba'avak drachim b'shvil shetitzle." You're not allowed to embed the egg in the sand or in the dirt by the road in order for it to roast. Now, what we're actually doing here is identifying cooking that goes on as a direct influence of the flame, or direct influence of the sun, and cooking that goes on as a secondary result, such as where something was heated on the flame, and then that heat is going to be transferred to the egg to cook it, or the road, the dirt on the road, was heated from the sun, and now is going to transfer the heat to the egg. The direct one is called the Av in this discussion, the source category. And then the indirect one is called the tolada, the result, the descendant, so to speak. And, first we'll see the Gemara in Source Gimel, then we'll see what Rashi does with it. The Gemara in Source Gimel says, V'lo yafki ena besu darin. You're not supposed to crack the egg open on the cloths. V'hadisnan. I have a Mishnah that says, Nos nin tavshil lesoch habor. This is without water. Okay, I'm allowed, if I have the words in brackets are words that I added just for clarity's sake. You're allowed to take food and put it into a cistern without any water in the cistern. Bishvil shiyehe shamur. So that'll be protected, meaning to keep it out of the heat. You have food, you don't want it to be out in the heat, mold will develop, whatever, so you put it in the cistern where it's cool. That's fine. Not only that, if you have water that's good water, and you want to drink it, but you want it to be cold, you have a pit somewhere that has water that's not potable. You're not drinking that water. But you take your water, you put it in a tube, a pipe of some kind, you seal it up, and you put it into there so that it'll cool off. That's fine. v'ashatzonein b'chama b'shvil sheyachamu, and you're also allowed to take cold water and leave it out in the sun for it to heat up. And that's the key line. Because the Mishnah, that's why I underlined it. The underline doesn't appear in the Gemara. The Mishnah said that the Tanakhama, the first view, says don't crack your egg on the cloths. Rabbi Yossi said you're okay. So this Mishnah that says that I'm allowed to leave the cold water out in the sun to heat it up, it's like Rabbi Yossi. I'm allowed to crack the egg on the cloth, I'm allowed to leave this in the sun. Lema Rabbi Yossi hivala rabbanan. Is that only Rabbi Yossi who permits this? The rabbis will not allow me to leave things in the sun to heat up? So Amar of Nachman, Bechama de kule amalo pligi deshari. Rav Nachman says no. He says, if it's in the sun, everybody agrees that it is permitted. There is nothing wrong with leaving food in the sun to heat it up on Shabbos. Even if it's going to cook. My egg is going to cook. It's going to fry. You know, not today, but, you know, a few months ago.
Israel.
Yeah. That works. I'm allowed to do that on Shabbos, and everybody is good with that idea. Betoldos ha'ur, kuli amalo pligi da'asir. Ur means ash, means fire. If it is a descendant form of cooking with a fire, the fire heated something else, and that item is what I'm going to use to heat my food, everybody agrees, asur, not allowed. Ki pli betoldos hachama. The debate is, what about if it is something that was heated from the sun, like the scarves that they're talking about? Mar savar gazrinan toldos hachama atu toldos aur, umar savar lo gazrinan. Now let me explain that by use of the table that I gave you in source hay. If you see the table, the bolded column, av and tolda, right? That's the original form and then the descendant form, direct and indirect. And then esh and chama are the two other columns, fire and sun. If something is cooked directly in a flame, right? Cooking something directly in a flame is asur. Please don't do that, right? Don't cook things in a fire on Shabbos. Not only that, but also the tolda of esh. Cooking something by exposing it to an item that was itself heated by a flame is also off limits. That's a derabanan. I think it's a derabanan. I think so. I'm not 100% sure of that. But it's for sure asur. Whether it's derabanan, deraisa, it's for sure prohibited. I'm not allowed to cook directly in the fire. I'm not allowed to cook in something that was heated by a fire. I am allowed to cook directly in the sun. Everything I've said until this point, everybody agrees with. So the top line, where it says chama, mutter, is everybody's view. The question is, how do I view toldos hachama, the descendant form of something that was of chama, meaning something that was heated in the sun, like the scarves. I have the scarves that were sitting out in the sun. They got really hot. I want to use them now to cook my egg. That's where the question comes. According to the view of the Chachamim, if we allow people to cook with something that was heated by the sun, they won't see a distinction between that and cooking with something that was heated by a fire. I just know that there's an item that had absorbed heat somehow, and it was allowed, so anytime it absorbed heat, it's okay. I didn't put this in the fire on Shabbos. That's where the Chachamim look at it. Rabbi Yossi says that can't be. That which heated it up was fine. Hachama. You can't now prohibit the toldos hachama, that which was heated from it. Yeah, you'll end up with it, as Hart said, you're going to end up treating the descendant item that was heated by the sun more strictly than something heated by the sun itself. He can't accept that. That's Rabbi Yossi can't accept that. Jump back to Dalet for a second, and then we'll be ready for the Nishmas Avram. In Dalet, Rashi explains why it is that chama is allowed at all, let alone toldos hachama. Rashi writes on the word dishari, that you're allowed to heat up things in the sun, and that everybody agrees. Why is that? This is the key Rashi. De'ein derech bishulo bekach. Because that's not the way things are cooked. People don't normally cook food by leaving it out in the sun. V'chama ba'ur lo michlefa de'ligzer ha'atuha. Also, people aren't going to confuse sun for fire. If you tell someone he's allowed to leave food in the sun and let it, you know, get cooked, he's not going to think that he's also allowed to cook it on the stove. people are able to understand that there's a distinction. So number one, biblically I'm fine because this isn't the way you cook. And rabbinically I'm fine because I have no concern for inappropriate extrapolation. That's what Rashi is spelling out for us. So here's the question for our microwave. Is a microwave derech bishul? Sorry?
Really or halachically?
Both. Answer both questions.
I can't answer the second one. The first one is yes.
Yes. Why do you say yes?
Because I'm through the actions of a form of wave that is known to heat tissue. By heating the tissue, I'm cooking it. So using simple physics, yes, it's cooking. Halachically, I can't answer.
So what you're saying is that it's the food is undergoing changes, which we associate with cooking.
Yes.
And therefore, it's called derech bishul. Why do I need the word derech? Why does Rashi say derech? Or because
that's a normal way of cooking, as opposed to the sun, which is not a normal way of cooking.
By using the word derech, he's adding in what Laura just said, which is that there's an issue of it being the normal way of cooking. It's not simply that it cooks. He didn't say bishul al bekach. He said that's the way people cook. Remember that we noted already earlier that malacha is based on what happened in the Mishkan. And in the Mishkan, they weren't using microwaves.
That we know.
I feel like I'm pretty good grounded with this. The question then is, will this be considered derech bishul? Now, some will say, and that's what we're about to see, that once a certain percentage of the population cooks a certain percentage of its meals using a particular technology, that becomes derech. Now, the question is not only microwaves. I gave a shiur a few years ago at the Bayit on chemical cooking. Right, where you have the ability, they have these labriut meals, if you can call that food. I did a sample in the kolel, so we had meals. We had some of the labriut meals for lunch.
Like
be glad we ordered pizza now. Sorry,
like in an acid, right. Cursing acid.
No. Or pour water onto a piece of metal. Basically, it heats up, and it heats up the food that's above it.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically, maybe there are chemicals that are involved. It's emitting sulfur, for sure.
Yeah.
The question is, will that constitute derech bishul? Now, you'll say, well, most people don't cook their food that way.
Except for the tzava.
Exactly. What if you're in an army unit, and that's the way the army heats its meals? That's the way they did it on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Can you really say it's not derech bishul come Shabbos? That's one of the questions you have to work with. So let's see what he does here. He quotes Rav Moshe Feinstein on this issue. He says on the last line on Shin and Hay.
I'm not sure I understand. What is this? How do they cook the food?
So you have this metal plate. It's true.
Okay.
And
how do you heat the metal plate?
Right. This is 5 years ago, so I don't remember for sure. I remember that there was an issue of adding water, but I thought I remember that there was another packet there also. Right.
It's a chemical reaction to generate heat.
Correct.
That heats the metal, and then you cook on
it. But your son ordered out.
So.
Yeah.
He turned
that
out of
his
fingers.
So.
How did he open it?
Ah, lo kein daito shel egros Moshe. He says, Moshe Feinstein disagreed with what Rav Shlomo Zalman said about microwaves. Shekhar save, flipping the page. Hine bidvar bishul b'chama, as far as cooking in the sun. Deleka iser b'shabbos, where there is no prohibition on Shabbos in cooking directly in the sun. Shapirish Rashi b'shabbos daf lamites, as Rashi explained, we saw it already. V'chein haran, mitam dein derech bishul b'kach, he says that's not the way people cook. Hupashut mishum dinehisha bishul shahaya b'mishkan haya ba'esh, mikal makam haya shayach l'melef gam bishul ayyadei chama liyos tolda. He says the point is this. They cooked in the Mishkan using fire, Ramosha says. I could have said that cooking in the sun should be a tolda, should be a descendant form, because when you think of the rules that govern what is called an av and what is called a tolda, generally speaking, an av is what they did in the Mishkan in a certain way with a certain goal. And then if I have another action which either uses the same mechanism for a different goal or uses a different mechanism to achieve the same goal, we call that a tolda, loosely.
So he says, why isn't cooking in the sun, which achieves the same goal, why isn't that a tolda? He says, look, with every type of malacha they're performing in the Mishkan, we're about seven lines down. He says, we learn from there to say that one is liable for anything that is like the av, same level of liability, meaning that it's biblical. The nikru toldos, those are called toldos. Shalachin hutzrach Rashi lefarish. That's why Rashi needs to explain. She'ein lemeidin bishul ayudei chama mi bishul ayudei ha'eish shahayev mishkan. He says that's what Rashi is getting at when he says, don't deduce sun solar heating from fire heating of food. Mishum she'ein derech bishul bakach, because that's not the way people cook. Umemela me'achar shalo yalfinon bishul chama mi bishul ha'ur. Since we don't learn about heating in the sun from heating with a flame, lekachiyuv af lo letoldos hachama, then there's also no liability, this is Rabbi Yossi's view, for cooking with a descendant form of solar cooking, where this heat, the sun heated X, and X heats my food. Av shederech habishul al yadam hu kamo yidei toldos ha'ur, even though the way you're doing it is the same for fire and for sun, meaning, visually, you wouldn't distinguish between cloths that were heated by exposure to a flame and cloths that were heated by exposure to the sun. I couldn't tell the difference once the original source is gone. Nonetheless, da'asudar ha'nischamim b'chama ba'os amidah sh'nischamim b'eish, he said there's no difference. The cloth was heated to the same extent by the sun or by the fire. V'chamei teveria ha'chamim k'chamei ha'ur. He says, in another example of the distinction between solar heated and, or naturally heated and fire heated, the hot springs in Tiberia are not heated, that's a discussion in the Gemara, are they considered to be heated by a fire, or are they considered to be heated by something that is sun-like? But you can't tell the difference when you have hot water from the hot springs. He says, nonetheless, even though I couldn't distinguish, fundamentally, heating something or cooking something in the sun is not of the malacha of bishul. Mishum de lo damu lemevashel shayev mishkan, because it is not comparable to the cooking that went on in the mishkan. Ein lemelech shuvas had told us the memela gamhem lo damu lebishul shayev mishkan. Therefore, I do not apply anything to the descendant form because that wasn't in the mishkan either. Kevin Shem told us davar she'ein bo meleches bishul. They are the descendant of something which doesn't involve bishul at all, meaning chama, meaning from the sun. And now he says, Moshe applying it to the microwave. The imkain, if so, beha microwave oven. Rav Moshe's Yiddishisms are always interesting. So he says, as far as the microwave oven, shetov levashel bo kemo be'esh mamash. He says it cooks just as well as fire does. People who have a microwave, he's writing this decades ago when not everybody had a microwave. So he says, people who had this, full disclosure, I don't have a microwave anymore. We got rid of it years ago. But he says, those who have a microwave use it more than they use a fire. The fact that it isn't more widespread is because not everyone has them when he's writing this in the 1970s. Ukshayiyu mitsuyin, but when they're common, vanda yishtam shubahem kulei alma, everybody is going to use them. Daha hu yoser tov, because it's better. It's a commercial. So he says, vada yesh lemelef mi bishul de'ur. Well, in that case, you should learn from cooking with a flame. Dahaya b'mishkan, which was in the Mishkan, b'chashi was tolda. This should be considered a descendant form because everyone's going to use it. This is derech bishul. This is the way people cook. Shulachol adinim ka'av. And the tolda has the same status as the av in terms of biblical liability. The bishul ayidei ha'ur. So like av, the bishul ayidei ha'ur, le'isur, l'chiv skila, v'chatas, all the penalties, and so on. Lo rak l'rashi v'haran, al'af l'kirya, sefer, etc. Ramosha concludes his thought. Ramosha believes that cooking with a microwave, because it has become common, is considered like esh. As far as he's concerned, it's a tolda of esh. So what you now have is Rosh Shlomo Zalman saying that you ought to cook for the patient using a microwave and just turn it on in an unusual way, because that isn't really bishul. Whereas Rav Moshe is going to say, no, I view this as the same thing as Ish. And therefore, he may say to you, better to use an electric or gas if it only requires one act of ignition, or electric, where you don't have the problem of turning on all the lights and pushing all the buttons and so forth. Rav Moshe's preference may actually be different. So he argues. Yes?
Is there a specific new technology that Moshe is expressing in terms of seeing new technology replacing the old technology? And that in his mind, there will be no more gas ovens in the future. That everyone will only use microwaves. And therefore, maybe in some respects, a loss of this halacha if he were to adopt the view that microwaves are not a tolda of Aish, then you would lose the very construct of Bishul Shabbos.
That's a really interesting idea. I hadn't thought about it that way. Once you say it that way, it sounds very... It sounds appealing, but I don't know. You follow the suggestion. It's a very interesting idea that this becomes, you know, along the lines, frankly, of what some have written regarding electricity in general.
Right.
You know, the if you will permit this, Shabbos is gone. It's an interesting question. I don't know. So it's certainly worth thinking about. Thank you.
So anything in your home that is heated up, you know, your hot water tank, your furnace, like there's a variety of things in your home that are hot on Shabbat through no action that you're taking. You may notice that there's different appliances in your home that are running, like your furnace or your hot water heater or something in your basement. But you could not use those to heat up food, even though that's not cooking.
So if it's heated by a flame, let's say the furnace,
yeah, I guess it depends on
then it's told us aish.
That's right. So it's,
well, think of it differently.
Yeah.
The furnace does whatever it does. The fan comes on and starts pushing the hot air through the...
through the ducts.
Through the different ducts.
Yeah.
So let's say after, pick a number of meters, all you've got is air.
Yeah.
And it's warm air. And you happen to have a little hole there and you put something in there to warm it up.
So that air was fire heated.
But it's no longer the fire. It's been cooled down because of the external...
See, let me distinguish between two things. One, is this heated by the fire? To the extent that it has heat, it is heated by the fire.
Yes.
However, this is a bishul issue. This is a cooking issue. If all it's going to do is bring something from refrigerator temperature to room temperature, you know, or a little bit above room temperature, I'm good with that. This is a cooking concern. It's not about heating things up in general. So I don't think that issue would necessarily be...
Okay, so you can crack an egg on the... It's hot enough to cook an egg on the sidewalk. A day like that, you can crack an egg on the sidewalk and you could cook that egg.
So it appears. The big question...
Well, that's
right.
The... You know... They say it's hot enough to cook an egg on the sidewalk.
I had a slut. I got to learn with a couple of guys from Uganda. And you know, the Gemara talks about cooking an egg on the sand, which we thought, that's ridiculous. Who does that? They do that. And like, if they want to cook an egg, they just throw it on the ground, come back, come in as later, and it's cooked.
They also have, you know, it was very popular in as something to sponsor for Sudan going back, you know, 7-10 years ago, the rice cookers, which were essentially a series of reflective surfaces focusing the light on the rice, and so, you know, it was cheap, it was portable, and so on. Again,
and it
that's
uses
also
the sun.
Yeah. It's all solar. So there's still a little piece to see. We're already at 53 minutes, so I'm going to hold the rest of this. Rishoma Zalman weighs in with his opinion about the microwaves. So God willing, we'll pick up with this next week. Okay?